Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I think I'm doing good, Justin.
Awesome.
How are you feeling?
I'm okay. Any announcements coming up?
Well, the only announcement right now is sometimes we have intros for our episodes, and sometimes those intros become too long. and we decided that instead of just not including them, we would just put them over on our Patreon. People might like to hear what we were saying for 15, 20 minutes. So if you want to hear these things, they're going on our Patreon, patreon.com/generationY. And this time I was talking about the USA gymnastics scandal that involved Larry Nassar. So if you're interested in what I had to say, check it out.
Quick birthday shout out to Sam. I hope you had a wonderful birthday and a wonderful week.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's what happens when you give Grammarly to your entire team. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Tonight's case is an interesting one. I will say that I know there's a lot of differing opinions about this case. I think that if you just read about this case on paper, it sounds like clear-cut murder. But once you dig into it a little bit, it's not so easy to decide what punishment and sentencing should have been. So with that, what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about a woman named Sally Challen who murdered her husband.
Now this took place in the United Kingdom, finally doing an international case. I always love that.
This occurred in Claygate, Surrey, August 14th, 2010. So let's give a little background on who Sally Challen was. She was married to a man named Richard for 31 years at that point. And she started dating Richard when she was 15 years old.
So we could assume that they've been together their entire lives and they're the only significant other they've really had.
Well, at least in Sally's case, because when she started dating Richard, he was 21 and she was 15. Now they met because Richard had a friend named Dellen Blackmore. And he introduced them. Sally had a father named Reginald Charles Napier Jenny, which is quite the name. He wasn't really involved in Sally's life, though, much because he died when she was 6 years old. And prior to that, he spent much of his time in India. Sally did have four brothers and a mother. And it's said that of her siblings, she was a surprise baby, not planned. One thing that people should know about Sally is that she seemed quite confident and quite smart, although she didn't finish high school, where her brothers were encouraged to have successful careers, successful education, but she was just kind of expected to be a secretary or a mother. There's nothing wrong with that, except if there isn't really a choice given there. And that's the important thing, especially these days. It seems like more and more people are aware that when you're raising your daughters and your sons, that you treat them equally.
She was very independent and very outgoing, so this was sort of against her nature, but she played her role to a T. Now, she met her soon-to-be husband, and they had two sons together for the most part. I would say the first few years of their marriage went very well, correct?
Well, Sally was very devoted to Richard. Even before they were married, she would essentially treat his apartment as their home. She would go over there just to cook and clean for him. Now, Sally, when she was 17, became pregnant. Her brothers encouraged her to get an abortion. So they took her to a place called Harley Street. This is where it's obvious, at least to the people around Sally, like her brothers, that there's something wrong here. Because Richard's response to this, well, it could have been anybody's, meaning the pregnancy she had.
So he obviously doesn't seem to care much about her and doesn't seem to care if she's pregnant or has his child.
That's exactly right. The other thing that was going on was Sally could tell that Richard was messing around on the side. He was seeing other women, and she decided to speak with him about it. He answered her by dragging her down the stairs and throwing her out of the door. This is what's known as a precedent. This is where he establishes that she doesn't have the right to question him, and if she does question him, she will be met with violence. This is actually all occurring before they actually got married. They were married in 1979.
Richard made a lot of money with his work, and he made Sally sign a prenup. He also made her get a job, but he was essentially in control of most of her finances. He controlled every aspect of this relationship. He worked a lot, and Richard was eventually able to buy his own car dealership.
And we know that's pretty good money. While he and Sally weren't quite getting along, she saw this as maybe this is how things are. But to everyone else, they look at this couple and their children and they think, what a great family.
Richard's behavior does spill out somewhat in front of their children and friends and family. He does make comments to her, criticizing her appearance, criticizing her weight. And he's not exactly kind or encouraging towards Sally or the children. He's a very competitive person, and he expects others to behave in sort of the same kind of manner.
And of course, if they were out somewhere, Richard was very friendly with everyone, but he also made people feel uncomfortable because when he spoke to Sally, he was condescending. He almost bullied her. So some people, if they knew that Richard and Sally were going to be somewhere, they just wouldn't show up.
You know, some people want to be liked, but they're going to be nicer and kinder to complete strangers. And then they're going to turn around and just treat their loved ones like garbage. And that's just the way they go. I don't know if that's a narcissist trait or what, but that's kind of what he's doing.
Now, you said that Richard controlled the finances. When he had Sally get that job, he would use her earnings to pay for the stuff, you know, related to the family, towards their house bill, towards gas, the utilities. And he was using his own paychecks for fun stuff, like expensive watches, gambling, and even a Ferrari.
Yeah, I saw the Ferrari and the very expensive motorcycle he had purchased. If you want to own those nice things, that's cool. But Richard, definitely, this was his peacocking. This was him showing off and saying, I'm better than you.
Well, we know that's correct, at least in his case, because of how he took care of himself, but not the rest of his family. In other words, he's the only one with those nice things. According to Sally, she felt like they didn't have much, thought they were struggling, but yet here he is driving a Ferrari.
For most of you, if you don't know how much a Ferrari costs, I would say the base price for a Ferrari is $200,000. So how many pounds is that?
Well, let's just say it's not a car that most people would ever even consider buying.
Yeah, it costs more than my house. He not only controlled the finances, but he also controlled their sex life. I guess he would more or less order her when he wanted to have sex. And it wasn't at her leisure or at her pleasure. It was all for him. When he wanted it, how he wanted it.
What we're getting at is that there were times when Richard straight up raped Sally.
According to her, that absolutely is the case.
And one of those situations happened after his friend, Dylan Blackmore, who had introduced the couple, hugged Sally. And Richard just didn't like it. And so, according to Sally, that night, Richard assaulted her inside of Dylan's home. That was in 1998.
Dylan is the one that initiated the hug. Sally didn't go over and hug him. Now, I don't know if Dylan was witness to anything after they left the room, but he knows that it caused issues. Sally will say that Richard dragged her into the room and raped her in a way to assert dominance, to assert that she is his possession. She doesn't belong to Dylan.
So as time went on, this dominance grew and he controlled who Sally could talk to and when. Apparently she had one friend that she was allowed to hang out with alone, but none of her other friends could be alone with her. And you know what that does. There are literally people who will say, you know, this friendship isn't really working out. So they just exit. They're not a part of her life anymore.
Well, yeah, he's making sure that he alienates her from her friends.
I'm sure many of you listening have heard of this before, this kind of behavior where especially a man will control a woman's life, how she looks, who she talks to, when she does something, when she doesn't do something, whether she works or not, whether she can drive a car or not, whether she can meet with her family. It's a kind of dominance. And if you think about it, she was 15 when she met him. She had never dated anyone before Richard. So all she knows is Richard.
Now, at this point, nobody's witnessed him beating her. Any of the rapes and sexual assaults have happened behind closed doors. So most people's perceptions are just, he's a controlling jerk and people don't get along with his personality and they don't like the way he treats his wife and his family. But they don't think that he's hitting her or beating her. So they don't get involved. They don't think there's a problem.
The other person who may not know there was a problem was Sally herself. She did end up seeing a doctor. And when they discussed what was going on with her, she started talking about how she had trouble sleeping. She really didn't have as much of an appetite anymore. And she was feeling very stressed. It's probably more obvious to the doctor than it is to Sally because this has become the norm for her. And that's the scary thing about this kind of situation is for some people, this is just their reality. How do they even escape it?
She was in survival mode every day. And every time he came home, she was on guard and on the defensive.
And let's just label it now. It's coercive control. One of the other things that happens is that the person in control makes the other person dependent upon them. So Sally left Richard in 2009 and moved out. She had had enough of his cheating. He was actually going to brothels. And this is after 31 years of marriage.
She began going through his phone and following him whenever he would leave the house. And he would work long hours and always have to work late. And one day she ended up finding a phone number that he called repeatedly. And that phone number ended up belonging to a brothel. And she would go to that brothel and wait in the parking lot. And she ended up seeing him park in the parking lot and go in. And when he saw her in the parking lot, he ran away like a scared child. Because people like this, they don't like to be confronted with their issues and their problems. She followed him home and confronted him with it. And this became a huge argument.
She even tried reporting him to the authorities for what he was up to, visiting these brothels. And she said, he's involved with these brothels. There's human trafficking going on.
And during that phone call to police, pretty much telling on or narking her husband out for going to these brothels, they said, where's your husband now? And she said, he's dead. But he wasn't dead. It was just a interesting thing she would say on the phone.
It is very interesting. She actually buys a house in November of 2009 with some money that she inherited. But what is it about this coercive control that doesn't allow her just to break free completely?
It's her entire life that she's spent with this person, and he's trained her. He has shown her that she's no good. He's broken down her self-esteem and pretty much told her that you're no good without me, so you need me in your life.
So Sally tried to break it off with Richard. His behavior was so controlling, and she had lived under his rule for so long. It's not that simple. I know many people probably have a problem with this. They say, well, if you're in a bad relationship, you just get out of it. But when you're controlled as much as Sally was, it's not that easy. She ended up asking and then begging Richard, please take me back. And he emailed a response to her.
He took the time to email her, but not call her or talk to her in person because all she was worth was a reply and an email. Got it.
I will consider your return only on these terms. You will continue and complete the divorce only with a £200,000 settlement. That when we go out together, it means together. This constant talking to strangers is rude and inconsiderate. We will agree to items in the home together, to give up smoking, to give up your constant interruptions when I am speaking. And if she agreed, he said they could date once a week. So just once a week, they could see each other.
Yeah, that's kind of a ridiculous set of rules, I guess. Don't speak and don't interrupt me when I'm speaking. I mean, come on.
Sally was trying to complete the divorce process because she thought that would get her back with Richard. But she started and stopped and started and stopped this process 13 times. In the meantime, her family were saying, even including her kids, were very upset about all this. They were saying, no, don't get back with him. Move on.
But again, she's only known one thing in her life, and he has beaten her down so much that she thinks, she believes that this is what she needs to do. She needs to make this marriage work.
August 14th, 2010. This is Saturday morning. Sally has once again discovered that Richard is speaking to another woman and she's getting upset.
Yeah. She's found receipts from quote unquote business trips that he was supposed to have been on, but they weren't to where he said he was going. And there was another incident where he had like two nude models sitting on his Ferrari or sitting on his lap, you know, in front of his Ferrari. And he just said that they were there modeling for something else. And he just thought he would have them come over and do this. But it's this one woman that he's really talking to that's really set her off now.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
So she had been living in her own home. This was in Claygate. And she went over to talk with Richard. Now, Richard said he wanted bacon and eggs. Well, he didn't have any there, so Sally went to a local store to buy some. You think, why is he sending me away? Why can't I just make him something that we have here? So she's very suspicious of this, but she does go to the store. When she returned, though, she secretly checks his phone, and she finds that he's been talking to a woman named Susan. He met Susan through a dating website. Richard is very controlling, and there's apparently a line that he uses a lot with Sally, and he uses it again here. She asks him about Susan, and he responds, "Don't question me." So Sally makes him breakfast. What happened, Justin?
Well, she'd brought a hammer with her. Now, later on, we'll hear her say that she didn't intend to kill him, but the hammer was definitely brought along just in case she didn't get the response that she was looking for, and she'll end up hitting him over the head about 20 times while he's eating the bacon and eggs. Now, at this point, she's enraged. She is seeing red. She thought that they were working on their marriage. She thought that he was going to change. But after all of the infidelity, and she became obsessed with looking at his phone and tracking his movements because he was always doing something suspicious. She just had enough. She'd absolutely had enough that day.
After he was killed, she stuffed a dish towel in his mouth and wrapped his body in curtains. And then she wrote a note saying, "I love you, Sally." And she put that note on Richard's body. Then she cleaned up the dishes and drove back to her house.
That's pretty cold and brutal. His body would be found on Sunday, August 15th, the morning after the incident. She took David to work and drove to a place called Beachy Head. She called her cousin and told her what she did. Then she went out to the cliffs about 500 feet above the beach and contemplated jumping off. A prevention team ended up coming out, got her to back away from the ledge. Now, they have to arrest her and charge her with murder because, I mean, she beat her husband over the head with a hammer, and it's obvious what she's done. The police are interviewing her and asking her why she did it. She explains, "I can't take it anymore. I just picked it up and I hit him. I don't know why. I feel that if I can't have him, nobody else can." And she really emphasizes that point during the interview, saying, "If I can't have him, nobody else can." At no point really during this interview does she talk about abuse. Does she talk about controlling behavior, sexual assault, any of those things? So all the police really have is a scorned, jealous woman who couldn't take it anymore and decided, if I can't have him, nobody can, and smashed him over the head with a hammer multiple times. This is pretty clear-cut murder for the police.
It did seem as though the police were trying to get at the heart of this. You know, possibly they were hoping she could explain this in a way that they could understand. Because from the outside looking in, it looked like her husband was having breakfast, and then she killed him. That doesn't sound like self-defense.
No, and a peaceful woman who's been married for 31 years, where did this come from? Why did she snap, as they would say?
And they said that while she was talking, that at times she seemed very confused. They asked her a number of questions about this hammer because, according to her son, he said that the hammer was always by the back door in the kitchen. But she took that same hammer from her new house back to the old house.
Which, that shows premeditation. That shows intent. I mean, she can say, "I didn't plan on murdering him, but I brought the hammer with me just in case." On paper, this is premeditated first degree murder, however you want to paint it. That is exactly the picture she paints for this interview.
Or maybe she brought it because she felt like she needed some way to protect herself. she was going to be confronting Richard, who'd always responded with violence or threats.
But you're assuming that.
Of course.
We are putting that out as our own opinion. At no point does she say that during the police interview. And that's the point. When the legal system gets involved, all they have to go on is she said this, she showed premeditation, and if she couldn't have them, nobody else could. Now, if you remove the first 20, 30 minutes we've been talking of the background, and all you know is a spouse hates their significant other and brings the hammer with them to the house and then murders them with it, nobody else on the outside is going to understand. And law enforcement definitely cannot infer anything from her statements as self-defense or anything such as that.
That's absolutely correct. In fact, at one point she said, "Something flipped inside my head." So all they can guess is either she was really mad and decided to kill him, or she became temporarily insane. But either way, she murdered a man. So now it's, well, up to a trial to decide really what happened here. But Justin, they have choices. Her defense team has choices. And when they present their case, they decide not to use any kind of mental illness defense or temporary insanity defense.
I don't even really understand the defense they chose. They don't even go with self-defense. They think that it's inappropriate to speak ill of the dead. So all they can really do is, I guess, react to the prosecutor's allegations. Is that kind of what you got out of it?
It's like there isn't a total story here. They only know what she said, and they only know what case has been brought against her.
And the prosecution has a very solid case. They're saying she was the controlling, jealous one, and she planned to kill Richard for his money after she discovered him cheating on her. Sally said that she found Richard's Viagra pills. She found receipts. She admits to following him, tracking him, looking at his phone. She would Google the numbers and people that she would find. I mean, the prosecutors, they have it all laid out. And if you don't know anything about Sally and the history, then this is a very, very solid case, and I don't know how anyone else would interpret it if you're never going to bring up any sort of abusive behavior or if you're not going to speak ill of the person you just murdered. I mean, that's just common sense in American courts, is they totally do character assassinations of victims every day. It's a dirty job, but defense attorneys have to do it all the time. That's what a good defense attorney does.
This trial in 2011 is important because you understand that she was being abused. But what do we always say? There is strategy when you go into court. It's up to your legal team to come up with how we're going to present our client, because we want to present our client in the best possible way that maximizes the sympathy that the court, the jury, will have on her. And sometimes those strategies work and sometimes they don't.
Yeah. And this was a terrible strategy. This was the worst possible defense that she could have had. They're just trying to respond to allegations. Oh, yeah, she looked at his phone, because people just look at their husband's phones. I mean, it just falls apart, and it's easy to paint her as the predator and the perpetrator. They paint her as very high functioning because she was holding down a job. She was a very productive person. And they're looking at her and saying, you're not mentally ill. You're functioning. So you can't say that you have a break in mental capacity here.
Right. What's the heaviest ammo that the defense brings out? It's that Richard is controlling. And then the prosecution can counter with, well, Sally was investigating every aspect of her husband's life. She was Googling phone numbers. She was counting his Viagra pills to see if he had used any in the meantime. And then she was calling around to every brothel or massage parlor in the area. And on top of that, she was smoking and drinking.
Excessively. But the defense doesn't even bring on family and friends to really help her character or to destroy Richard's character. So during this trial, family and friends are sitting there watching this case, just screaming inside, going, "Why won't you talk about him? Why won't you talk about his behavior?" And they just won't do it. But she does get a psychiatrist to pretty much say that she was confused and agitated and had episodes of depression. And she was diagnosed with adjustment disorder.
And how would you describe that?
There's a lot of different ways to interpret adjustment disorder. If you're going to think about the typical version of it that we use in America, it's borderline personality disorder, which usually includes, but not limited to, severe mood swings, impulsive behavior, things like that.
Susan, the woman who Richard had been talking to and seeing once in a while, she actually was a witness at this trial. And when she was asked about Sally, she said, well, Sally snapped and killed Richard. She said, there was nothing between the two of us. Our relationship was just platonic. With Susan up there, she's able to paint Sally as this person who is very much in control of what she's doing. She knows what she's doing and what effects they'll have on everyone. And so Susan is saying, Sally is high functioning. She's not suffering from any mental illness or any of these other problems. Don't have sympathy for this person. She killed a man that I was friends with. And so what is the court left to think here? Because people look at this and they say, it sounds like she was just really jealous and bitter and decided to kill her husband over it.
It's very clear cut. Without any mitigating factors and a complete lack of understanding of why she did it besides jealousy, there's only one outcome. There's only one viewpoint of this. There's only one perception of this. Any jury or any judge presented with this evidence is going to find her guilty. I would find her guilty.
Sally was found guilty. And when she was sentenced, the judge even told her that she was eaten up with jealousy. She would serve at least 18 years in prison and would be 75 by the time she could qualify for parole.
Now, that's a harsh punishment, knowing the situation, but that is most likely a just punishment for anyone that kills their spouse outright, premeditated. But after just 1 year of prison life, being behind bars, she starts to find help, seek others who know about coercive control. Before that time in the UK, that was not considered abuse. That was not considered at all in the legal world. But things are changing while Sally sits behind bars.
This continues, though, Justin. Even with new laws, there are many people out there that will say, oh, your husband abused you? Where are your bruises?
It's like mental anguish and verbal abuse. They don't matter. It's only if it turns physical.
So the media, of course, runs with this story of this scorned wife who committed murder. But meanwhile, her children, her two sons, are working to try and free her, advocating for her. They're trying to help get appeals done.
And really what they're trying to go for is a manslaughter charge. That's it. They're not saying she's innocent. They're not saying it's justified. They're not saying, free my mom, she's a good person. They're saying she was improperly charged. She was improperly sentenced. She should have been charged with manslaughter, and all these mitigating factors should have been considered. But at least her first appeal gets shot down outright, correct?
And that's just because I believe there's just this perception that she doesn't need any sympathy. She doesn't need any understanding. Everyone already gets it. They don't see her as someone who deserves anything less than the life sentence she was given. But laws change. And of course, people become educated over time, do they not?
Absolutely. I think me and you have learned a lot over the years since we've started podcasting.
Oh, absolutely. In 2015, coercive control became a criminal offense. And it was said that her two sons, which are David and James, that's when they learned and could understand exactly what their mother had gone through. Because before then, they didn't have a term. They knew some of what was going on, but this actually helped really define it in their heads so that they could actually tell other people about it. They could spread awareness in that way.
It put a face to the monster that they had endured most of their lives too.
Sally, in February of 2019, has another appeal. Now, she had a niece, and I believe her name was Dalla. She discovered justice for women. And because she really believed in her aunt and that she deserved a more fair shake from the courts, she got behind her. Now, all this means is we've covered other cases where someone is trying to get an appeal through because they feel like they were wrongfully convicted or their trial wasn't fair or the sentencing wasn't fair. And the more people that get behind you, the better your chances are.
This is a little different too, because most of the time you're trying to show that you didn't commit the crime. You're like, oh, hey, I need a retrial because DNA evidence will now exonerate me because somebody else did it. But this case, I mean, it's weird because she did it. She admits to it. Everybody knows she did it. But now you're trying to add mitigating factors after the fact. And that's really hard to do. It's not done a lot. There's always legal technicalities and stuff like that that people can appeal on. But for a murder case like this, it was setting some precedents.
I brought up the coercive control being criminalized in 2015. And this is where the appeal says that should alter how Sally was tried. She has mitigating factors. So diminished responsibility.
Well, that's the thing, is they're saying her husband would have been charged, but the Crown, the prosecutor, it's like, yeah, but that doesn't give you an excuse. That can't be used as a defense. The only thing that you can use as a defense is provocation or diminished responsibility. And the court system has to allow this man's behavior to be used as a defense. And they're not really making that sync up. They're having a hard time because they're like, well, the way the system is provocation and diminished responsibility. And you claiming that this guy was abusive isn't exactly justifying either one of those.
I had mentioned justice for women. It was founded by a woman named Harriet Wistrich. And Sally contacted this group in 2012 because she needed help. And who better to help her than someone who understands these issues that were all a part of her case? Harriet herself said that when she met with Sally, she could tell that Sally had been through a lot. She said when she met her, she was cold, she was withdrawn. And yet working with her, she was able to get her to open up. Together, they were trying to fight to get this murder charge brought down to a manslaughter charge. She feels like she did do wrong, but as we said, the sentencing is important because it should fit the crime. So if you have any understanding of what kind of abuse that Sally suffered from the time she was a teenager all the way up until 2010, then that should be a part of the sentencing. It should be taken into account so that she doesn't face a murder charge as if she just shot someone in the street. There's a lot more to this case than just she killed a man. So even though there's this law in the books that says coercive control is criminal, that doesn't mean that automatically everybody says, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
You don't have to be beaten by someone to be abused.
And it doesn't automatically mean, oh, you get to kill anyone that's doing that to you. But it needs to be evaluated, argued, and or presented if a crime is occurring.
Wistrich started gathering evidence, emails, and witness accounts from people who knew Richard and Sally. And this is the way that they can present a case that says there was a lot going on for decades before Richard was killed.
A lot of these witnesses, friends and family, talk about how he treated her, talk about the change in her personality, going from a very outgoing, independent woman to drinking and smoking, being very withdrawn, and just disengaging from her friendships and relationships. It's all of the common traits and characteristics of somebody that is being abused.
This appeal is heard on February 27th, 2019. And unlike the trial, her defense actually presents a case of mental health issues. They talk about how Sally was treated for bipolar disorder, dependent personality disorder, and adjustment disorder while in prison. And then she was also assessed by a psychiatrist named Dr. Adshead, who said that Sally developed psychosis in prison, which that's really not common if a person doesn't have a previous history of mental illness. So again, a lot going on here, and it wasn't so simple as she was a jealous woman who wanted to kill her cheating husband.
The mental illnesses and diagnoses she got are definitely diminished responsibility or mitigating factors. So you don't have to focus nearly as much on the controlling behavior and abusive behavior of her husband. You can focus on, because of that behavior, it impacted her, it changed her, and it gives her diminished responsibility in her actions.
And the other difference here was at this hearing, her son, James, read a victim impact statement. So you have people talking about Sally and speaking for her. There's actually a lot of support going on, and I think it presents a wholly different case. It's essentially a whole different trial in a way, because she was never really supported in that original trial. They were so worried about how she would come off that they played it too safe. And here it's like, let's just bare everything and then let the court decide.
It's February 2019 that this court of appeals quashes her conviction and orders a new trial. Doesn't mean she's free, but they're saying you were unjustly tried and we're going to retry you. Now, they don't give a lot of statements here because they don't want to taint the new trial. They don't want to influence it in any way. So they don't dismiss the charges with prejudice or anything like that. They just grant her a new trial. So they kick the ball back into the prosecution's hands. But June 7th, 2019, prosecutors, they accept the plea deal that the defense had presented for manslaughter. So the judge announced on the 7th that she would not face retrial and she would be sentenced to manslaughter, but that was time served. She's already served over 8 years behind bars, and a manslaughter charge falls within that range. She gets to walk free. She was 65 years old. That's pretty impressive. I'm going to say that I don't agree that you should sneak up behind somebody and smash them in the head with a hammer until they're dead. So I think that there does need to be some sort of justice, some sort of check and balance there. But at the same time, Aaron, I don't really perceive her as a threat to society. So I'm okay with her walking out after 8, close to 9 years.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/genY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/genY.
Well, I think also this is the kind of case that can do a lot of good because it can be very educational for a public that still has this idea that abuse only happens due to physical strikes. So when we get past that and we say there are many kinds of abuse and we need to take them seriously, this will set that precedent for them. They can maybe understand it better now. It can be tricky because there will always be people who will say, Sally's just a murderer, because they don't have that empathy. They can't put themselves in her shoes. But Sally gets out of prison and now she wants to talk about this. She admits that she feels worse in many ways than she did before, because she said when she got out of prison, she was just on this rush and she felt like life's amazing. You know, all the food is amazing. Just living is amazing, because she was locked up for a while. But she's really evaluating what she'd been through. And it's like anything else. If you give yourself enough time away from a situation, maybe you can start to see it for what it was, truly see it for what it was. And now she wants to tell people about it. This is coercive control. Don't let it happen to you. Here's what you're looking for. Get some help. So she becomes an advocate.
And she didn't even understand herself that, I mean, she understood that she didn't like the behavior. She understood that her life was falling apart, but she didn't really understand that that was illegal or that was even abuse. I mean, she ended up leaving him because of the cheating and infidelity. She didn't leave him because of the abusive behavior. So her campaign is to hopefully inform others who might be in this situation, you know, raise awareness and say, hey, is your significant other controlling you, controlling all your money, putting you down, alienating you from your friends and family? Maybe you need to hear this. Maybe you need to understand that you are being abused and hopefully take steps to change your situation.
While her sons were very supportive of her, there's still the fact that they miss their dad. You know, in their memories, they didn't really understand the kind of abuse that Richard was putting on their mother. So they still have these good memories of their father. And so it's painful for them that he's gone. But with Sally being out, well, that's their mom. And they said that they would have to get used to being a family again. Now, the money, Justin. Richard was worth a little over £1 million when he died. But Sally didn't qualify because of Britain's forfeiture rule. So the sons would get it. It was eventually ruled that she did get access to the inheritance because of her extraordinary, tragic, and rare circumstances. But she claims that she's not about this money. She's not going to keep it. She's going to let her sons have it.
You know, in most cases where the husband did it or the wife kills the husband and one of them's extremely rich, that's always a motive. That's always a factor. But for her, that wasn't. I'm glad that they can make an exception for a situation like this. Although I do agree that if you are charged with murdering somebody, that you should not have access to their estate or their assets, because that's just a slap in the face to any surviving members of their family and whatnot. So,
well, for many married couples, they both share the money. But we know for a fact in this case that she was cut off from it. So, of course, some people would say she did it for the money. Because of the decision here where Sally was released, this is going to affect other cases because other women who have been in very similar situations will say, now I have a defense.
And of course, there is pushback on this. There are people that will argue this is a slippery slope. And now anyone that's killed their spouse can claim these things. But it's really hard to prove abuse. It's really hard to prove in a court of law control. It wasn't easy for Sally's defense team to do this, but they could dig through the records. They could dig through the emails. And Richard, in his response to her saying, you can come back with me if you do this whole big long set of rules. I mean, I'm pretty sure that one can infer what kind of personality type he had and what kind of relationship they really were in. So the arguments of slippery slope and this is going to allow people to get away with murder, I don't really buy into that. But
these days, Sally Challen is not advocating as much. From what I understand, she's become a little more withdrawn because she just wants to live her life. I think part of that is due to the advocacy she did do. Her case is an inspiration for other women who have been sentenced to long terms, despite having been abused for a long time before the murders were committed. And one of the things she said that I think is really important is she was hoping to see schools teaching young people about coercive control. This would be for boys and girls because it would give them the tools going forward. This is what you don't do. Or if this is happening to you, this is how you recognize it. Because, you know, if you think about what happened with Sally, she was 15 when she met Richard. She had no real experience to tell her what was right and what was wrong or what to do about it.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.